This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Andrew and enter promo code Andrew at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. And by IT Pro TV, an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. Visit itpro.tv/what-the-tech and use the code WTT30 for a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account. What the tech? Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only, Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
A late start today. We are experimenting here on What the Tech. We have a new... surprising, it's so weird, because Leo is doing it too at the same time as we are.
That's funny.
That's spooky. Very spooky. Because I had no idea. He's using some new system, and we are using a totally different system.
Yeah, our system is called Skype.
Right now it's called Skype. It was not Skype about 10 minutes ago when we kind of had figured it out.
Yeah.
So we are slowly phasing away from Skype for a number of reasons. One being, Paul's video can no longer send Skype video anymore. I don't know what it is. We've done this 1,000 times. We've gone through everything, and yep, it's a no-go. But there, luckily for us, we live in an age where there are alternatives to Skype. Some expensive, some not so expensive. The one that we are doing is a little expensive. But it's integrated in our production software. It's called vMix. That's our production software that we use. And they have their own WebRTC, peer-to-peer service where Paul could, you know, Skype. I use Skype as if it's like Kleenex, you know, or like Xerox.
Yeah.
He skypes in.
And we're Skyping each other.
We're Skyping each other all day long. This is what we do. He Skypes in, and the quality is much higher for the video. And the audio is much higher because it's an Opus codec. So it's 64 kilobits Opus, which is equivalent to 128 MP3. So much higher than what Skype does, by the way.
Right.
My theory behind is that Skype changed their codecs a little bit. They changed the way that they handle video and audio. And whatever happened, happened. And it kind of broke the way that it works for you. Because now they're Silk Wide instead of Silk 3. There's a whole thing we're going to do. So either I could TeamViewer into Paul's computer and start screwing around with the XML in Skype to kind of revert it back to Silk 3, or we could totally abandon Skype and go to this new platform. I would rather go to this new platform. So that is why we're starting late. I know a lot of people have been asking these questions, like, what are you going to be using? It's vMix 19. It's their new, version of the software. It's very impressive, actually. So I wanted to mention that because people are interested in this stuff, Paul. Who would think on a tech podcast, people are interested in the technology that we use here?
Right. I will say, the brief experience we had with the other service, the video quality was fantastic.
Yeah, the video and the audio sounded great and looked great. But our producer, Suncast, said, Andrew, I'm not 100% that you're going to get the recording, and you guys have ads today, so maybe we should just go back to Skype. But it was a cool 20 minutes that we had testing it out. Guys, we do have a lot to talk about. I have a lot of questions for Paul. Microsoft accounts weren't working today. Did you hear about that, Paul? I did.
I heard a little bit about
A little bit about it. I saw your tweet about sitting in front of your Xbox for 30 minutes. And somebody made an actual achievement.
Green circle.
Yeah.
I got a couple of those, actually. Yeah.
It's awesome. So we're going to talk about that and a couple other things. But before we do, I want to take a moment and talk about our sponsor. And that is, if I could figure this out, here we go. It's Casper. Guys, I've been sleeping on a Casper mattress since, for 2 years now. The best decision I personally made when it came to a purchase, because I'm one of these people that I thought the more you spend, the better you get, right? I went into the store. I bought this very expensive mattress from one of these mattress stores. Mm-hmm. I slept on this thing at the store, and they do these pinpoint adjustments where, you know, you're a 5 here, but you're a 10 there, so this is the perfect mattress for you. I thought that was proof in the science, and I got this mattress, and I absolutely hated it from day one. And Unfortunately, you can't sleep on a thing for 100 nights and send it back to the store. But with Casper, you can. You get a 100-night sleep guarantee. If you're not happy with your mattress, it's a painless return within a 100-day period. You can sleep on this thing for 99 days and return the next day. It's unbelievable. And they have a great offer for you guys. $50 off applies to mattress purchases, free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. Go to Casper.com/Andrew. That's Casper.com/Andrew. And you can check out the wide range of mattresses that they have. You can get them pretty much in any size. And I absolutely love these guys because they are they've been with us for a while. And by the way, other than the mattress stuff, they have a bunch of stuff now, too. They have foundations for the mattress. They have bed sheets. They have all these different things there and pillows. Go check it out, Casper.com/Andrew, and let them know we sent you. Hey, Paul, you want to talk about this outage that happened today?
Sure. I can't explain it because Microsoft hasn't really discussed it. But at some point early this morning, and lasting as much as 1 to 2 hours, I don't think it was even that long, basically the authentication layer associated with the Microsoft account went down. So this kind of propagates itself in various ways. If you went to Outlook.com or OneDrive.com or account.microsoft.com, yeah, or
that was me. Microsoft. I went yeah, to my account for Office.
Right. You wouldn't be able to sign in.
No.
Xbox wouldn't be able to sign in, which I experienced. The way I found out about it is, you know, you sit down in front of your computer in the morning, get a little notification in the corner, and it says, hey, we need you to re-authenticate with your Microsoft account. This happens from time to time. You probably get one of these about once a month, you know, if nothing goes wrong. Just make sure you were you and all that kind of stuff. And so I clicked on it. And because I signed into my computer with a PIN, it asked me for my PIN, so not, you know, my four-digit code. And then I got the little notification, said, hey, something's wrong with the Microsoft account. We need you to re-authenticate. And I'm like, okay. And then it brought up the PIN thing again, and I thought, huh. So I went through that four times, and then I realized, okay, something's wrong.
It's not me. It's them.
Tried multiple browsers, tried a second computer, tried the Xbox. Something is wrong with the Microsoft account. One of those error dialogues or whatever, that I guess an error web page I got, was when I tried to sign in on the web. One of the times it actually said, your Microsoft account does not exist. And that's not what you want to see.
No. I imagine a lot of people freaked out getting that message.
Yeah. Yeah. And I heard from every one of them, I think. But the, you know, but look, I use two-step authentication. I mean, I'm not actually worried about my account being hacked per se. I mean, obviously anything could happen, and, you know, there could be a glitch up in the cloud and Microsoft could screw something up. But I knew it'd come back. I mean, I wasn't all that worried about it, but the thing that struck me most, and I was talking to Brad about this earlier today, is the way people react to this stuff is kind of tragic. You know, like, I wish this could be amusing to me, but I just find it to be kind of sad. So there's two levels of it. There's the Microsoft focused part of it, where I am surprised by how many people don't realize that your Microsoft account is the same thing you use to log into OneDrive, to Outlook.com, to Office.com, to Xbox, right? You know, that kind of thing. So when I first started tweeting it, I was hearing from a lot of people who were saying, oh, by the way, OneDrive.com is down as well. You know, and it's like, no, it's the same thing. It's the authentication. It's Microsoft account. It's down. Of course it's down. There's also this kind of level of anti-cloud type people out in the world, right? This is why
we've spoken about this a couple times in the past.
Yeah, I think of this as kind of Chicken Littleism.
Is it a trust thing?
Oh yeah, of course. So here's let me give you a couple examples. You know, one guy said, this is why we do on-premise authentication at my workplace. Okay. So without getting into the details of why that statement makes no sense at all, I'll just throw out a couple of things. One is, Microsoft account has nothing to do with workplace authentication. It's a completely different system. As it turns out, today's outage did not impact Microsoft's cloud-based workplace authentication schemes, which go through Azure and Office 365 commercial. It's a different system. That did not go out today. I heard it from a guy who said, this is why I don't sign into my Windows 10 PC with a Microsoft account. As if today's outage would have meant that he couldn't get into his computer. In other words, turn on your computer in the morning and it doesn't let you log in because it can't authenticate to the cloud.
That's not how it works.
That is not how it works.
I mean, but you know what, though? I'll tell you something. That is unless you actually use it, right? You would kind of assume that it's a Microsoft account and maybe you wouldn't be able to get into it. But the reality is Microsoft is aware that this would be very bad if that happened.
Well, allow me to educate you because that's not how it works. Like you said, but here, let me draw an interesting comparison. Most people probably aren't that familiar with Chromebooks either, right? And so, you know, when you sign into a Chromebook, you sign up with your Google account. If the Chromebook was offline or if Google's authentication services were down, would you be able to sign into the Chromebook and get to work? And the answer is yes. It works the same way. It caches it. It has to. You know, in other words, I think the thing, you know, it's funny because I've been writing about this a lot lately, looking at Microsoft accounts specifically. The interaction that you have with your Microsoft account in Windows 10 from a sign-in perspective is actually very, very interesting.
Yeah.
And I think Microsoft used non-precise, maybe inaccurate language in the past to describe what you were doing. So, for example, if you set up Windows 8 or Windows 8.1 or Windows 10 in the past, new computer, or you blew it away and redid it, and you get to that part of setup where it says enter a user, and you say, you know what? I'm not going to use a Microsoft account. I'm going to use a local account, which I advise, by the way, for various reasons that have nothing to do with any of this.
Into Windows?
Yeah, I can get into that later. Okay. But just know that that's a separate issue.
Okay.
I created an account called Paul, right? Local account. It's an administrator because it's the first account on the computer. That's always been the case. There's no password if you don't want there to be no password. And then you start installing applications. You sync OneDrive. You do all the stuff you want to do. Down the road, you may decide that you want to, and this is where it gets inaccurate or non-precise, like convert this account to a Microsoft account. Mm-hmm. You're not actually doing that. Like it makes it sound like what you did was delete Paul and start using this other thing. And you're not really. What you're really doing is kind of linking the accounts, right? And the point of that is it's passed through authentication. So if you open a store app, it will automatically log you into that same account, the Microsoft account. If you open the Groove app and if you pay for Groove Music Pass, you will get that automatically, right? If you don't want to do that, and there are reasons not to, and there are reasons to as well, you could sign into most of the applications in Windows 10 individually, right? So you're not really your use of a Microsoft account. It's really not what some people think it is. It's not. It doesn't get rid of a local account. There's still technically under the covers a local account occurring on the PC. There has to be. That's how it's really how you log in.
Yeah, you always need going to have a local account.
Yeah, so what you're really getting when you, I would call it, link a Microsoft account to a local account is a couple things. Automatic pass-through authentication, like I just talked about. You get the ability to sync your settings across multiple PCs and other devices, and there's some value to that if you want the same wallpaper everywhere or whatever. But what you're also getting, and this is, I don't want to call this a negative, but I think this is one of those little things people don't quite understand because it works a lot like signing into an Active Directory account works at a workplace. You're also getting a set of rules that are coming down from the cloud in this case that govern the use of that account on your PC.
Okay.
And among the things that those rules include are the fact that every once in a while, and I think it's every 30 days, you need to re-authenticate, right? So what you're really doing is you're typing in a password and if you use a Microsoft account, you have to use a password. You could use a PIN. You could use Windows Hello, right? You can get into your computer all these different ways. But every once in a while, it's going to pop up and say, we need to make sure you're really you again, you know? It's a rule from the cloud.
And by the way,
it's a policy.
I don't think that's an inconvenience at all. I think that's a really smart thing because, think about how many times people misplace their laptops or someone gets a hold of something that they shouldn't. You want that thing to every now and then say, hey, is this you? So it's not forever missing, you know?
Yes, right.
And you know what? Obviously, you could change your password, but some people are oblivious. I have a friend. He lost his laptop 3 weeks ago at work.
Yeah.
And he just, I was out with him the other day, and he was telling me, he's like, oh, it's somewhere at work. I don't know where it is.
So actually, you can tell me this. I bet this works the same way on your Samsung phone that it does my iPhone. Mm-hmm. If I have to reboot my iPhone for some reason, for example, I install an upgrade or something.
Blow it away. Everything or?
No. In other words, I'm updating from 10.2 to 10.3 or whatever it is. It has to reboot, install offline, come back up.
Yeah.
The first time you log into the phone, you can't use the fingerprint. You have to type in your PIN.
Okay.
Right? Because that's how it works. Like, in other words, it doesn't know why it rebooted. It can't trust that you did that on purpose. It really needs to make sure you were you.
Well, I don't know anything about that because we don't get updates. Remember, Paul? To Android.
Okay. But you, okay.
No, well, but I'm it sorry. Doesn't let me, do that. Oh, no, but it doesn't. By the way, use, it doesn't let
me
do
use
that.
Let me use an example you'll appreciate.
Yeah.
Your phone crashes. So yeah, you have to reboot it.
You got
to
reboot it. Yes. Right. There you go. Yes.
So you're saying you can just use the fingerprint reader the very first time.
Yeah. So if I get, because I've gotten one update on this thing. There was one, I don't know if it was an OS update or a major update.
Don't focus on the update part of it. But, I just mean your phone reboots for some reason. You shut it off, you turn it on.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter why.
Yes.
Right? Don't you have to type in your PIN?
You got to type in your PIN. Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's all. That's what this is. That's all.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point of all this is you don't need an active internet connection, and Microsoft's authentication servers don't need to be online for you to sign in with a Microsoft account on a Windows 10 PC.
So why – let me ask you this because this is interesting. So none of the Windows machines, which is 99% of my house, they're all Windows machines. Some people like to say that I'm an Apple shill, which I am not.
Yeah.
I just have one Apple device. That's it, guys.
Yeah, it's just that it's on camera.
It's just
all the
always
time.
On. This glow is always there.
Yeah, should put a cover on that.
Yeah,
actually, here. This is what I recommend.
What do you have?
Is you can put this.
Put a Windows sticker right over that.
Wonderful sticker on it, and then people won't think you're a shill.
No, they'll just think that I'm an Apple. I'm a Microsoft Mark, as they call it in wrestling business. So I don't use any Microsoft accounts because I have like 10,000 computers here, and I need these things on. I don't have a password on them because they're off the network. It's an internal network for some.
Yeah. By the way, one of the rules you get from the cloud I was talking about is you can't not use your password on the computer if you're going to connect it to your Microsoft account.
So
because once you're into the computer, you get pass through access to all the stuff.
Absolutely.
The payment methods you use in the store and all your private information.
Yeah. So I have just like the backup machine, for example. I don't have a password on that thing. It's its own network for the house. And, I'll move stuff around in that thing. If I was using an everyday computer, like my Mac, like I use my Mac and it was a Windows laptop, I would most likely put a Microsoft account and like everything synced, because if I go to my house and I have my desktop, I kind of want my Groove music there. If I go, I want everything kind of coinciding with each other. This is a very unorthodox situation where I need everything to behave individually.
Yes.
With that said, why don't you recommend doing a Microsoft
account? So I wrote an article about this a few weeks ago. Because I am working on an ongoing basis on this Windows 10 book, which I'm now updating for the Critters update. Well, one of the central questions I've always been trying to come away with a very firm answer to is, why would you sign into a Microsoft account? What are the pros? What are the cons? And what are the situations in which maybe you don't want to do that, right? And it's been interesting to me because I use a lot of different computers. I get review laptops in all the time, review desktops. You sign in, you install your apps, all the rigmarole you do. I do this all the time. And you would think that for me, signing into a Microsoft account would be a convenience. And honestly, I just don't see the benefit of it. I don't recommend signing in with your Microsoft account when you first set up Windows 10, regardless of what you're going to do later. Like, you can convert it or link it to a Microsoft account at any time. There's no reason to do it right up front, and there are very good reasons not to do it. One of the simplest reasons is I want to change the machine name before it gets synced up to OneDrive because it gives you a garbage name.
Why does it do that now?
I don't know.
Okay, so let me ask you.
So I can talk about. I can tell you why. The truth is, I just don't accept this as a. I just don't like it. Like,
okay.
One of the things that Microsoft has done over many years is they try to make things easier on people, right? And if you think about something like you're setting up a device, whether it's a Windows 10 PC or an iPhone or whatever, you go through some number of steps where you say, "Here's my account information. Yes, I want to turn on location services. Yes, I want to do this privacy thing. Yes. There's all this stuff you have to kind of configure. I've been talking about this recently. If you configure a new iOS device right now, you'll be astonished by how many questions you have to answer, how many things you have to fill out.
So much.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Microsoft's gone in the opposite direction. They've been chopping stuff out of setup. Although, as we I think we talked about this last week or a couple weeks ago, you know, they've added another step recently with the new privacy controls because they have to. But what they really want you to do is just accept Express Setup, sign in with your Microsoft account, and stop asking questions. So one of the things they took out of setup that used to be in there years ago was a step where you said, here's where I live, New York, Boston, Eastern time zone, whatever it is. Here's, yes, the date and time are correct. And here's the computer name I want, right? Uh-huh. They got rid of those steps. Well, on one level, you could say they've made setup easier because there are fewer steps. There are fewer things for someone to think about. And what that person really wants to do is use Windows, not think about all this stuff.
Yeah, but you know what the problem is, in my opinion?
Yeah, I do.
The problem is when your computer decides that it's going to be now known as Desktop Q9552-PC, you don't know what the hell that is.
So this is what I mean by I know why they did it. I don't completely agree with why they did it. Maybe for a normal person, that computer name doesn't matter too much because if you go to OneDrive in the cloud, they only have one PC anyway, or maybe they have two, and finding out which one is which is not a big deal. For me, I have lots of review laptops. I need to be able to tell immediately which one is which, so I give them logical names where I can look at the name and say, I know exactly what that computer is. this is a little weird. A little, maybe something a non-technical user wouldn't care about. But I also like using a local account right off the bat for two big reasons. One is it creates the folder name of my user account based on the name I supplied. So I supply the name Paul every single time. So the folder for my user account is Paul. Even if I convert it or link it to a Microsoft account, something at hotmail.com, whatever, that folder name doesn't change. It's always going to be Paul. And in my case, Paul is a short name. It's a short file name, you know, like a complete file name, like with the entire path. It's short. C users Paul. It's very short. There are no problems. Now, I've had instances, I don't remember the exact naming they use, but if you sign in with a Microsoft account, in my case, the folder name could be something like THUR_001. Or something like that. And it's like, I don't want that. I want this to be simple and short and easy to use and easy to get into and all that kind of stuff. So, again, that's not necessarily for everybody. But the other half of it is, and I think this does apply to more people, what's the first thing you do when you install Windows or get a new computer? You sync your data, if you do that, like OneDrive, Dropbox, whatever, and you install applications. When you install applications, many times what you have to do is reboot a couple of times, right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to type in a password or whatever every single time I'm doing this when I'm first setting it up. But once everything is set up and configured the way I want it, then I will add a password if I keep it as a local account, which I almost always do. And then I will add a PIN so I can sign in even more easily. So it's still secure, but I go that way. Now, if I convert it or link it to a Microsoft account, at that point, I have to sign in with a password, right? That's a policy they send out.
Interesting.
And I also add a PIN or whatever. Or if it has Windows Hello, you know, a modern computer might have Windows Hello. Anyway, this is a huge conversation about, kind of a weird sidetrack off of Microsoft account. But I guess the point is, this is something I've really spent a lot of time thinking about, looking at, and then also writing about. And I have basically come to the conclusion that there are only two reasons to sign into a Microsoft account. I'm sorry. To sign into a Windows 10 PC with your Microsoft account. The first one is that settings sync feature is very valuable to you. You can't do setting sync unless you sign into the computer.
Yeah.
You have to do that. The other one, though, is Edge. If you use Microsoft Edge for some reason, you have to sign in with a Microsoft account. Otherwise, Edge won't sync any of its settings between all your computers. And that sync is actually very important because that's how you get like password sync if you're saving your passwords in the browser. It's how you get your favorite sync, like the bookmarks that it does, and all of the other settings that are related to Edge. You can't sign into Edge. It's the only application that comes with Windows 10 that supports signing in, but not at the app level. Like you could sign into Groove. You could sign into movies and TV. You can sign into the Windows Store. You can sign into any of those apps that have sign-ins, like the Skype preview app. But with Microsoft Edge, you have to sign into the OS, or it doesn't. it won't sync anything.
So are people, I don't know, are there any kind of statistics as to how many people are actually using a Microsoft account with
it? No, Microsoft doesn't divulge that kind of information. I mean, I would imagine given the user base of Windows 10 in particular, it's probably pretty high because it's normal people. There's a benefit to, how do I explain this? So, for example, you probably use Firefox or Chrome, right? And so if you use one of those browsers, or if you use Opera too, I guess, you sign into that, okay? And I use Chrome. And so with Chrome, what I get is I have a Google account, obviously. It's protected by two-step authentication. It has a bunch of things associated with it, including all those bookmarks and extensions and all that stuff. Every time I sign into Chrome on any new computer, which is one of the very first things I do, I'm creating that kind of authentication relationship that you could create at the OS level in Windows 10 with a Microsoft account. A lot of the things that I do today are on the web. And so me being able to sign in automatically to something like Google Inbox or Gmail or Google Calendar or a Pocket or whatever other services I may use is really valuable and it's really nice. And you know, you might want to do that at the Windows level. And I think for normal people, there's some attraction to that because it is simpler, right? If you're using Edge, and again, I don't think many people are, but let's say you are, you're like a normal person, you sign in with your Hotmail account or whatever your Microsoft account, and then you open Edge, and now Edge is syncing all your bookmarks, it's syncing all of your passwords, and so you go to Outlook.com, which is a Microsoft site, you go to Google.com, which is a Google site, it will sign you into those things automatically, all because you're syncing your stuff back at the Microsoft account level when you sign into Windows 10, and so there is a benefit to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just don't use Edge. I just don't use Edge. So
I don't know too many people using Edge right now.
Right. So in other words, I can skip that part of it because I use Chrome and I sign into Chrome. You know, like I don't have to sign in back there because I'm using Edge. I'm not using Edge anyway. So what's the difference? And I don't care if my wallpaper is the same on every computer. Like I just don't, to me, that's not a big, I don't look at this backdrop. I'm looking at Windows and stuff.
It's interesting. I mean, it's an interesting discussion to have, and it kind of goes into more of a, you know, to kind of go back to the original part of this, which we always get off topic here on the show. Cloud computing. I mean, there is a fear still with cloud computing, and I want to take a survey. We got 120 people in the chat room right now. I'm curious as to how many people, not how many people use cloud services, but how many people go out of their way not to sync their photos with Google Photo, not to sync their photos with with iCloud. Is the interesting part because I know a lot of people that don't want to do that.
I do too. So, but here's the thing, I think this is a really important point. This should not be viewed as a dividing line between like technical people and non-technical people. And this is one of the goofy things you see when people are talking about Windows 10 Cloud. A lot of people kind of misunderstand the audience. What they look at this thing and they think, well, it can only run store apps. It must only be for low-end computers that will compete with Chrome OS or Chromebooks. That's part of it. But actually, you know, there are rich and powerful people. There are smart people, technical people that just want a computer that just works too, by the way. So that applies to them too. That thing will run on premium PCs as well. And so when it comes to something like signing in with a Microsoft account, it doesn't mean that the people who are doing that are all rubes. They're not. There are a bunch of normal people doing it. But even for technical people, those conveniences are very real. And so I don't happen to use Microsoft Edge. I don't actually use Groove on my computer. I do use Groove, but I don't use it on my PC. So if I need to sign into like one of these apps, I'll just sign into that app. But if you use a bunch of different Microsoft services, a bunch of Microsoft apps, there is a convenience to just having, you sign in once at the OS level and all that other stuff happens automatically. Like there's nothing wrong with that. I guess what I'm saying is it's something you should think about and then just do whatever's right for you. And for me, I even though I use so many different computers, the benefits of signing in with a Microsoft account just don't really excite me or apply to me. And I don't. I wouldn't look down on anyone who does do that.
So I'm looking here, and I'm looking at the chat room, and this is a good question. They're saying, you know, some people run their own cloud syncing services, which is great. Some people use OneDrive. Other people do disable. So someone says, I disable Google Photos on my Android. So is it a trust thing that you don't trust Google to handle this, or you just prefer to use something else? That's my question.
I think prefer is the right word. So for example, on I use an iPhone, but I don't use many Apple apps or services at all. So I use the basic apps like phone and text messaging, obviously, but I don't use their email app. I use Google Inbox. I don't use their calendar app. I use Google Calendar.
Yeah.
I don't use their music app. I in my case, I do use Google Play Music.
But do you use everything unanimously across all services? Like, this is your service. You don't have a mix and match going. These are what you use on everything.
Well, yeah, except that I don't actually use them on everything. So in other words, I don't use a music service or app on my computer because I'm not listening to music through my computer ever. Doesn't mean I don't listen to music. I just don't need it on the computer. Yeah. And that's one of those things, you know, when we talk about how computer usage has changed over the years because of phones in particular.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that makes using a computer nice because it doesn't have to have everything on it. One of the very freeing things about not signing with a Microsoft account or not using all of the built-in baloney that I just happen not to care about, whether it's Windows or iOS or whatever, is that I can use a device for the thing that it's really good for. And for me on a computer, I need some productivity apps. I need some software development stuff. I need some photo editing or picture editing tools. And that's it. I don't need on this computer a way to watch movies.
Yeah.
I don't need on this computer a way to listen to music. I have other devices that handle that.
That handle that for you.
Yeah.
It is interesting. I'm just looking at the answers in the chat room and the thought process. You know, I'm always fascinated on how people use certain devices and why they use certain things a certain way. You know, I've been battling this mixed environment fiasco for a while now because I use a Mac, but I use Windows and I use Android as well. So would like to, you know, kind of have everything kind of sync together. In my case, it won't always work perfectly. I use different services on different devices, but most people don't really do that, and I'm curious to see what they use.
You know, so what are we seeing? Give me some examples.
So, some people don't trust Google with anything, and they don't want to use Google Photos. Other people, I'm getting message on Facebook. They do not upload their photos to iCloud.
Yeah, I do. By the way, I do that as well. Do not.
You do not. I don't upload to iCloud either.
Actually, sorry to interrupt real quick, but just with regards to photos, the two things I would say there is, and this is the first one is very important. It doesn't matter which service you use. Don't use one service. Your phone can automatically upload photos to multiple services. You just have to install the apps. And so you could have Google, you could have Microsoft with OneDrive, you could have Apple with iCloud if you're on an iPhone, you could have Amazon that does this as well, Dropbox does this. Photos are too important not to upload those to at least two different services.
Absolutely.
And so the first thing is make sure you have two. But the other one is this with regards to Google, I completely understand not trusting Google. You really need to be using Google Photos. It's unbelievable. And Microsoft is trying to copy some of the features. Apple is trying to copy some of the features. They're both offering those, like, this is what happened on that day, you know.
Yeah. Which is great. I love it, actually.
No one does that better than Google. I understand, but I would caution people to get past that and give Google Photos a shot. I think you'll be blown away by how awesome it is.
I said, if it's a security thing, two-factor authentication. It's a pain in the butt.
Always use two-factor.
Always.
Yeah. Yep.
It's an interesting discussion, which we're going to continue. We have a lot of other things to talk about, too. But before we do that, I want to welcome a new sponsor to the show, new friend of the show, and it's someone that you know and I know, itpro.tv. Guys, I'm gonna tell you, I have a copy in front of me, which I'm not even going to read because I've been playing around with these guys for a while, their service. And it's interesting because I've taken a lot of online courses. Paul, I know you've done some online courses as well. And there's nothing more tedious than trying to genuinely learn something and it looks terrible and sounds terrible and it looks boring. I've done online seminars to better educate myself. People don't think that I do, but I do these things. And it's tedious to sit there and the video's grainy and the audio's terrible. IT Pro TV changes all of that. The way that we learn things, the way that we use training courses is totally flipped upside down with these guys because they have invested all this time and effort in high-quality videos, high-quality audio, live interactive video. So if you go to the website right now and you register, by the way, if you go to itpro.tv/what-the-tech, which we have a link right there, you could use our code WTT30 for a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account. So you have a whole list of free courses here if you just want to play around with it. You could go down the list here. But here's the nitty-gritty. You could get all these courses on certifications. There's Apple. There's Amazon, Cisco. The list goes on and on. And then they also have, if I could pull it down here, next week on the show, we're going to be showing a course that I'm taking right now. So they have BizPro TV, which is their beta, and DevPro TV. So you could see what kind of courses they have for business training, leading technology teams, professional development. There's a whole list here. It's actually unbelievable. There's a Photoshop course that I'm going to be taking, and it's actually an Adobe Suite course that my wife and I are going to start taking because she's getting into photography, and I kind of want to learn something with her, so we're going to do this together. It's not just IT. It's not just certification programs. They have a wide range of courses, online education, that I highly recommend. Many different tiers. They have a couple different tiers, actually, not many. Membership. They have the free basic membership that gives you access to their live feed and several free courses. You could go to their on-air button on their website, click on it, and you can see what the schedule is. It's very similar to how we do it here and how Twit does it. It's actually amazing that these guys have put this together where it's a web television network that teaches you something, unlike what you get here. You're not going to learning anything from me and Paul. But with a free membership, you get access to the live feed. And, of course, you can view the courses that are being recorded and over 30 hours of new content created every single week. So there's no shortage of what you can learn. They have a standard membership that gives you access to the entire course library. The content on IT Pro TV produced on a daily basis is adding to the courses, obviously. So every day you get new stuff on demand. IT Pro TV Premium membership includes all the benefits of the basic and the standard membership, but you also have access to over 100 step-by-step virtual labs, which is very good. Unlimited practice exams and career concierge services. That is a very, very important thing. Guys, go check them out. itpro.tv/what-hype-the-tech. And you could use the code WTT30 at checkout, and you get a free 7-day trial included, and you get included a 30% off the lifetime of your account. Very interesting stuff. A lot of great courses. I know a lot of people are in IT here. There's a link in the chat room for you to sign up. Check it out. Sign up for the free membership and play along. I believe they're live right now. Leave us. Go watch them. IT Pro TV, guys. I'm actually amazed on the amount of content that they have there. They also recently launched an Apple TV app, so you can watch this anywhere. That's the amazing part of this. They're on Roku, Chromecast, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, and or the PC. They're everywhere. IT Pro TV, guys. I want to thank them for supporting the show. Next week, I'm gonna show you a demo of I don't know why I couldn't log in on this machine. I want to show you guys a demo of the courses and what they look like. Actually, I could do one right now. Let me do this right now. Let me click on this. Mobility and devices fundamentals. This is what it looks like, actually. If you guys want to see this, this is how awesome this is. Have you ever taken a training course like this, Paul? Look at this.
Oh, yeah. I do this all the time.
All the time. But this good. Look at this thing. This good.
In this segment, we're going to take a look at the MTA exam, the Microsoft Technology.
I don't know why I don't have access to this.
The MTA? That's absolutely right. The MTA, the Microsoft Technology Associate, is designed to be entry point into the world of Microsoft certifications. If you're just getting started.
Very awesome stuff. I really, this is actually it.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I do developer courses, but yeah, they're.
But when it looks like that, Paul, it makes it a little bit easier, you know? Sure. You're going in this thing, you go, wow, this looks great. Let me pay attention. So IT Pro TV, I want to thank them for supporting the show. I'm excited for the Photoshop course that I need to take with Joss, the Adobe Suite course. Right. Let's see. So Windows 10 automatic updates, Paul, going away?
Oof. No. What do you mean?
you could turn off automatic updates now?
No.
Why is everybody telling me this?
Yeah. In the creators update, they're making some long overdue changes to the way that updates work because, of course, we're in this, you know, evergreen world. We always get updates. So basically what they've done is they've removed a feature that was like defer updates, and they've created a new feature that's like delay updates. And delay updates allows you to delay non-security updates for some time period. I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's a big improvement over what it was before. I apologize. I don't remember. 30 days maybe, something like that. But the bigger deal is the ability to configure your active hours over a wider range of time and to be able to say no to automatic reboots until you're ready for that to happen, right? So this happened to me this week. In fact, this very computer is not on the Kratos update. And I got up, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, and I'm presented with I sign into the computer. My desktop is clean. There's nothing running. I had surely left it with all kinds of windows open, and it had installed an update overnight. And that's what happens. So they're building in what they call like a snooze button, where it will now alert you and say, hey, by the way, unless you tell us otherwise, tonight when you go to bed, this thing's going to reboot and we're going to install these updates. And you can now, schedule those things.
So I believe it was 3 days prior. You could defer for 3 days, and now it's 6 months.
6 months. Okay. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It was a significant change. Yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's much better. But why can't I just say, no, I don't want to do this?
Well, because the central promise of this system is still the same, right? The idea is that you get as much of the world as possible under the same version of Windows, same level of updating, and it's a safer place because everyone is at that same place. And then as updates come out, you of course keep updating everyone in lockstep. It's one of those things, like theoretically it is a better system, but there's been all these problems with different audience types. People on slow connections, for example, have problems with updates, obviously. People have been losing work. I mean, there's all these horror stories about people like, what the hell, I was working on whatever, I went to bed, I got up in the morning and I lost some work in a document because you rebooted my computer, even though the application was still running.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're,
not as big of a story as, I guess, 6 months. Maybe you'll get a year the next update.
Well, the bigger story in some ways is there are other changes that Microsoft is making. There's the privacy thing, which I think we talked about, privacy theater, I call it. Still a big change. But with regards to updates, the other big change is they're starting to do Delta updating, starting with the Kratos update. So people who are in the Windows Insider program have been testing it on, I differentiate between updates and upgrades. And so an update is something you could install at any time, right? They have monthly updates that occur through Patch Tuesday, like we're all really familiar with. But if you're running Windows 10, the truth is any day of the week, any week, you could get an update. And hopefully those things don't require a reboot, but sometimes they do. And those are updates. They're small. An upgrade is when you go from Windows 10 version, 1607, let's say, to the next version, which is 1703 or the Kratos update. That's an upgrade.
Yeah.
And the issue with an upgrade is what you're really doing is downloading an entire build of Windows 10 and you're doing, you're upgrading. It's not you're not applying an update. You're upgrading to a new version of Windows 10. It's a major action. So I think it was back in December they turned on Delta updating for updates, meaning those little updates. And what that means is that not everyone gets the same file, like the same big file package. The system examines your computer and says, well, you only need this part of it because some of your stuff is already up to date. We can send down a smaller thing. And the savings there are apparently something like 35%.
Wow.
On bandwidth. So as of, I think, the last build for the Windows Insider Preview, they enabled this Delta download technology for upgrades. And if you're in the Windows Insider Preview, if you install a new build, you're actually doing an upgrade, because every single time you download a build, you're doing what is essentially what normal people do is an upgrade. And also 35% performance improvement. So when you get the Creators update in April or May or whenever it comes down to your computer, if you're not in the Windows Insider program, you're not going to you can't take advantage of this for upgrades yet. You have to already have Creators update on your computer. But going forward, all of the updates you install every day, week, or month, and all of the upgrades that you install once or twice a year will use this new Delta downloading. Sounds weird when I say it that way. Differential technology, let's call it. Meaning, it's going to examine your system and only give you the parts that you really need, not the full download package.
It's. I guess this will make people happy. Or not?
I sort of feel like people are never actually happy and that you're not actually going to have
Tell me how people are not happy.
Well, in other words, do I expect to see reports from people 6 months or a year from now say, wow, you know, I used to download these updates and they used to take a really long time and now they're like 35% quicker. I actually don't think anyone's going to notice that.
Yeah.
But the truth is for people on who are paying for bandwidth, especially, it's an important change and they have the ability to do this. It's good that they're doing it, right? There's no downside to this. So it's a good thing. But you know how it is. Like people complain when things go wrong.
Yeah.
We don't hear from them.
I have a really weird Windows issue where randomly on two of my machines, it just everything freezes and goes black and like the whole UI just resets.
Yeah.
This is something new. This started like maybe like 2 months ago on two specific machines and are both AMD machines.
Right.
So I don't know.
You need differential rollback.
I would love to roll
maybe
back.
That will be in the next up. That
will roll back to Windows. Do they have like a rollback to like Windows XP? So I guarantee you people could do it. They should do that. They should be like, hey, you know what? You don't like us? You have a choice. You could either use it or go to Windows XP.
Well, yeah, they don't want to do that because a lot of people would say, great, take Windows XP.
You know? And then when you click on it, big prompt comes up. It's Clippy. And he goes, what the hell is wrong with you?
Right. And he has that terrible comedian's voice. What was that guy?
Gilbert Gottfried?
Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
Hey, guy.
Yeah.
I heard you wanted to go back to XP.
Yeah. Excellent. Paul, I wanted to kind of show something on the air today before I run out of time.
It's going to be scatological. What are you talking
it's
about?
I discovered, actually, I get a lot of podcasting questions on the show, like constantly. That's the most asked thing that I get. Like people always ask me, what kind of mic to buy? What kind of mixer to use? What do you use? What do I use? So whenever I discover something new and kind of untapped as far as information out there, I always like to highlight it on the show because this is the only tech show that I do nowadays. And the microphone that I found is this. It's called the Nox. It's a cardioid USB XLR. It's a dynamic mic. And the price is $39. So you're going to say, okay, Andrew, why are you showing me this cheapo mic? Well,
I have one of those, Andrew, and you gave it to me.
Well, you do not have that. That is exactly the whole point. You have one of these. I gave you one of these.
I have the old version.
You have the ATR2100. Which is the podcaster's mic, in my opinion. It's anywhere from $60 to $90, depending on the time of the year. And it's an excellent mic. You know, it's perfect. Okay. It sounds great, actually, for the amount that you're paying for this microphone. It sounds great. What this company has done, I guess they discovered the Chinese factory that this comes out of.
Ah, nice. And it looks exactly like it.
It is exactly the same microphone. The only difference is that this has a switch like this, and the other one is like a different type of switch. The switch is different. This dog is annoying me right now.
Yeah, so they didn't copy the one thing that doesn't really matter.
No, they copied it off of the other version of this microphone. There is two versions of the same mic. Now there's a third. $39, guys. $39. We'll have a link in their notes also to this. If Suncast could put a link now, that'd be wonderful. $39, but this microphone is stellar. I ordered it. I have it upstairs. I'm doing a test of it, and it is exactly the same thing as far as I could tell. I even opened it up, and everything, the internals look exactly the same. So essentially, this company found the factory, and I guess now they're producing them. Isn't that amazing? It's half the cost. How do they do it?
China.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So I thought that would be an interesting thing to highlight here on the show. That is my product of the week.
So your whole podcast network is turning into how to find cheap Chinese knockoffs of the stuff that people really want.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do now. It's going to be called What the China?
What the China?
It's just going to be knockoffs of everything. Rolexes, jewelry, diamonds. You could buy knockoff diamonds from China.
Sure. You can carry all this stuff in your knockoff Louis Vuitton bag.
Yeah. And then your knockoff Louboutin shoes. You could do Louboutins as your shoes. I actually have a knockoff SDI converter. I have one from the company that I'm not going to name the name, so I don't want to, because they're a friend of ours, so I don't want to hurt them in their sales, but it's like it's like crazy expensive. I want to say it's like $1,500 or $1,000 for this converter. It's a very high-end SDI converter. And the one that I found is the same exact thing in the same box with a different logo on it, and I bought it for $89. $89 compared to $1,500.
I mean,
How? I mean, I hope
children are not making these things, you know?
Ants are making it, Paul. They've discovered a way for millions of ants to assemble these things. That's the only answer that I have. It's unbelievable. Talking about technology, I don't know. This is a terrible segue. I had an idea in my head and didn't work. Nintendo Switch, the fastest selling Nintendo console of all time. And the Zelda game is the fastest selling launch day title of all time for them.
Andrew, I'm just going to go back to when we first started talking about this, and everyone was criticizing Nintendo for this device. And my reaction to this is incredible. I think this thing is awesome. My only concern was that the number of pieces you get in the box would be a little confusing to people and would be a problem. You know, there's too many moving parts. But I think this notion of a device that can be mobile or docked and used with a TV, and I think it makes all kinds of sense. And the thing that's really interesting about it is it supposedly doesn't get great battery life. You know, the graphics are not anywhere close to what you get on an Xbox One, let alone a PlayStation 4. And yet, everyone who has reviewed, I don't think there's a bad review out there. I think everyone who's seen this thing has fallen in love with it.
So,
and that's kind of the magic of Nintendo in a way, right?
So there's a report here for the numbers.
Okay.
There's a report that the Nintendo Switch sold an estimate 330,000 units in Japan the first 3 days it was available, which placed it between the first 2 days of the Wii sales, which is 371, and the Wii U's 308 console in that country. And then obviously you add U.S. sales and it becomes the most selling Nintendo console of all time for the launch, you know, launch week, launch day, whatever it is. The Wii U only had sold 13 million units to date. Think about that.
What?
The Wii U only sold 13 million units.
Oh, over the course of its lifetime.
The course of its lifetime. So this thing.
Yeah, the Wii sold, I mean, I don't know the number, but it's going to be over 100 million. I mean, I would imagine.
So
it'll be up there somewhere.
Here's a discussion here, right? Everybody says, you know, the report was coming out. Everybody said, this is going to be the last console Nintendo makes. Why is Nintendo making a console? Well, because they're selling them.
Yeah, we've talked about this. Nintendo is different. You know, I'm looking up the number. Yes, they sold 101.6 million units of the Wii, so that was the best selling console of that generation by about 20 million units. So there's just something about Nintendo. I mean, they've had some duds in the past, right? I mean, the Super Nintendo didn't do as well as the original Nintendo versus the competition.
Although did it not?
I think it actually finally got there, but in the beginning it certainly didn't. You know, the Nintendo 64, the GameCube was terrible. The Wii turned things around nicely. The Wii U, not so much. So, I think this is a company that, you know, they're kind of like the Disney of video games. Like I think they're always going to be doing this kind of thing, and they're always going to be doing their own little drummer thing, like the beat of their own drummer.
Yeah.
And I like that there's a company like that out there, right? I mean, Microsoft and Sony are doing different takes on basically the same strategy. I mean, you know, Microsoft's taking advantage of the Windows ecosystem because they can. Sony doesn't have that, so they approach things a little differently. But we're talking about basically the same kinds of things. And I think it's cool that there's this third option, you know?
It's interesting. So I'm looking at their sales, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Wii sold 100 million units. That was the highest, that is the most sold console that they ever made.
Yes.
100 million. In comparison to the Super Nintendo, it sold 32 million.
Okay.
The Wii sold, what did I say? I forgot what it was.
1 million. Yeah.
No, the Wii U, sorry.
The Wii, Wii U sold 13
million. That is a big drop.
Oh, yeah.
That's a flop. I mean, that's serious. That's a real deal flop in this company's history. But with this device, I don't know why people are automatically jumping to that it's going to be a failure as far as sales.
Well, actually, I think that tune has changed, right? I think that was the story. Then they launched it and everyone's been like, oh. Now, it's way too early to say, right? Because things need to change. I mean, we need to see what this looks like over time. You know, one of the legitimate criticisms of this device right now is that there aren't really a lot of titles available yet. Like, Nintendo got this thing out the gate as quickly as they could, I think. And they just don't have a huge library of games. But honestly, the appearance of new games, especially this coming holiday season, is what's going to propel this thing forward. And I don't think they have another Wii U in their hands. I think this thing's going to be a lot more successful than that.
I mean, you know? it's pretty impressive. The people that I know that got it, obviously, there's only one game really right now, and they're very impressed by it, and it's fine. But that's, again, Nintendo's issue that they, you know, launch day, you kind of want at least three major titles. My argument here for them is they're kind of smart that they didn't launch a lot of the stuff because they missed holiday. So now they're going to sell whatever. You know, those diehards are going to buy this.
Yeah, you get exactly. That's exactly
then
right.
The holiday season is going to come. So not only are you going to get the Zelda game with the console, you're also going to buy whatever other launch title happens in November for the holiday season. So they actually could have a very solid sale, season for fourth quarter sales for this thing, which I anticipate they will. I just hope that they keep the momentum up because I don't know what the future of Nintendo as a console manufacturer is.
Right.
Because they still do not get how the UIs work. How, you know, Microsoft obviously has it. They get it. Sony kind of gets it. I've been pretty critical of their UI in the PlayStation 3 and 4. But that's my personal issue with it. The Wii, it's very convoluted. Like, the Wii U was very bizarre. It's its own little bubble. It's not like anything else.
Right.
So I'm curious to see how they do. Are you going to get one? Because I'm definitely getting one.
I am, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Can we have, like, those cool parties? Can it be me, you, and Mary Jo Foley, like, having beers and playing it and, like, taking it to Rattle and Hum?
So I want to be really clear about this part of it.
Yeah.
We are never doing that. No, I don't know. I mean, the way that I play video games, the truth is, well, who knows? I don't know. I'm very interested in this. I mean, one of the things I'll say about Nintendo is that I've never resented them, their popularity. I've never quite been in their audience, you know, but I like what they do. I sort of like it as an outside observer. I like that they're around. Like, I really appreciate that they're a thing, you know.
They're hanging on.
I don't know. I mean, I will see. Who knows? I mean, maybe this turns into me doing more mobile gaming, which is something I frankly don't do a lot of these days, you know.
It's cute though, and it tastes bad if you try to eat the pucks. Yeah. Did you read that? They purposely on it. Tastes terrible.
That's fine. No, it's smart because you don't want. Listen, last thing you want to hear is child chokes to death on Nintendo cartridge.
You'll never hear that. I'll tell you that.
Well, but that's the point, isn't it? I mean, that's why they do.
Yeah. The UI obviously is a little better for people who I did get some hands on time, and I have to tell you I'm very hopeful for this one. And the Zelda game is stunningly beautiful.
Yeah, it
they've
looks
done
really
a
nice.
Very good job. And look at that; they're not, you know, it's amazing actually. If you compare their hardware to the PS4 and the Xbox, it's not up there hardware wise, but it's able to, you know, they're able to make it up with their software. They're doing a good job with this. So I just wanted to touch on that. I'm hoping that we get more numbers though. You know, I still stand by the fact that the perfect partnership for them is Apple.
Yeah,
I feel like this is the perfect partnership. Get out of the console making business. Sell a bunch of Apple TVs with the logo on it, with your Nintendo logo, and let that be your online console.
I agree that there's some synergy there, but first of all, I think you're falling into that kind of trap of Nintendo shouldn't make consoles anymore, and I don't know that we've proven that yet. Like, let's see how this thing does. I mean, it's very possible they can be fine on their own. But the other issue is that Apple doesn't partner, period.
And Nintendo doesn't either.
Yeah. And I don't know how you solve that problem. I mean, it's possible that this new relationship because of the Mario game on iOS and, you know, who knows, maybe Apple can always have an exclusive window on mobile games for a little while or something. I mean, something like that's possible. But, I mean, do I ever see, like, you know, I mean, Apple can't buy Nintendo, not because of the price, but because Japanese companies are protected by.
Very, yeah.
You know, it's just a different system there. So,
but how about this? Okay. I mean, I'm talking more along the lines of this. Nintendo has unbelievable, a plethora of retro games that, I mean, their gaming library is stellar. And you saw the success with that relaunch of the original Nintendo this holiday season that came with like 30 games. I feel like the Apple TV would be the perfect platform for them to have a Nintendo channel. You buy all your games on there, and this is what you play your retro games on. They would make, I mean, money hand over fist. I mean, crazy. I would imagine that this would be a huge source of revenue for them, way more than just putting these games in their virtual store on the Wii or the Switch now.
Yep. Yeah, I like it. I have no. Yeah.
I would spend $4 or $5 on a game if I want to play it on there. I mean, I do that on the Nintendo Wii U. I just bought a bunch of games on there.
And it does seem like the Apple TV would have the horsepower necessary to handle.
I mean, if it doesn't, then there's something really wrong. But
well, okay, but it's not a bad idea. Yeah.
Yeah. You just buy you buy a Bluetooth Apple Nintendo controller that only works with this stupid thing.
Yep.
And there you go.
That's a good idea. Yeah. I like it.
All right, guys, that's it for this week. We're going to do a bonus show. If you're watching this live, stay tuned. We're going to be on. We're going to continue this. If not, go to patreon.com/whatthetech. Sign up there as little as $1 per episode, and you get access to all this bonus stuff that we do. For all things Paul, go to therot.com, Therot Premium. Paul's working hard. Brad is working hard, and the whole team over there is working hard. You did a series last week on the team, certain people from the team. Mm-hmm. And is George on this week?
Not this week, but we're going to figure that out. Yeah, we'll do that.
If you guys haven't seen it, go to therot.com. Go check the First Ring Daily from last week. Every day, Paul had a different guest on. I was on twice, actually. I'm the only one to ever do it twice. I can hold that title. I'm the only guy that's ever been interviewed twice. Go there. Go sign up. All things Paul. Also, if you're buying stuff on Amazon, like this microphone, use our Amazon link, gfq.co/Amazon, and bookmark it. And whenever you make a purchase, we get a small little credit from the sale. That's it for this week, guys. See you all later.